Good evening, folks. This is Gene. I'm here tonight about anger. Today at 12, I give a little portion of it, but anger is a debilitating emotion. We wrestle with it. We're paralyzed by it. Sometimes it's just an irritation or blurting out a statement, a word that you wish you could take back, but it won't come back. Occasionally, however, it comes out with such force that it results in hostile action. And the reason for debilitating is that it's so public. You cannot hide anger or on its display. It's there for everybody to witness and remember. The answer, of course, is self-control. But it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to practice it. Anger is a choice that easily becomes a habit. You may be surprised to know that how accurately that describes a great man whose life we're examining, a man quoted most often in the New Testament than any other New Testament character, a man whose biography is the longest of any Old Testament biography. That man is David. He's my hero, of course. David, the remarkable man, has mauled patience for years under the spear of Saul. You know, at night time, Saul would have an evil spirit come in, and they'd have David come in and play the guitar, harp, or whatever it was. And he could control his fits of anger and control his rage. And sometimes during the night, Saul would try to kill him with a spear. He was simply insane. Let me set the background for David. If you can imagine, The people working out in the fields were shepherds. They kept their flocks and herds of goats, and they were owned by wealthy people. Our story, the basic problem was one of labor, and conflict had to be the employer-employee relationship. Basically, what happened to David is that the employee planned to kill the boss. David planned to kill the boss because he wouldn't pay him. First, let's set the stage. As we do, we will see what kind of one-act play that unfolds in several scenes. We'll get to the background, and then we'll describe the characters before any kind of conflict. Saul was still king, and David was hiding behind the scenes. He had 600 fighting men, but he stayed out of Saul's way. He was fighting wild tribes in the area of Paran. As such, they were protecting those shepherds, which is what they did, protecting shepherds from the attack of wild tribes. You know, it's a ruckus time, if you can realize the Middle East right now. They would suddenly overrun an area and steal the livestock and assault small villages. It's been like ISIS. According to the custom of the day, it was a time the sheep was being sheared, and it was common for the owner of the animals to set aside a portion of the profit he made and give to those who protected his shepherds while they were in the field. There's no written law. There's no amount of money. It was like a tip. David and his men had been faithful watching out for the flocks of a man named Nabal. And the word reached them that he was shearing his sheep. They said, "Hot dog, let's go get paid." David thinks that after a careful protection he and his men had provided, it would only be fair that they received some remuneration for. The problem is, Nabal is a stingy man, like a lot of rich people. When we first met Nabal, we learned that he is a man of Macon, our moron. His business was in Carmel. Right away, that tells us that he's probably got a few bucks. He's heavy on the hips. In fact, Nabal means fool. There is no God. He lived his life through there was no God. Furthermore, he was told that he was a man of harsh words. The Hebrew word here means hard, stubborn, and belligerent. You ever met anybody like that? Hard, stubborn, and belligerent. Have you got a boss like that? Furthermore, it says he's evil in his dealings, which means he was dishonest, quite a combination. Nabal was a man demanding deceptive, and unfair. The second character in the story, his wife, was just the opposite. Her name was Abigail. Scripture tells us she was both intelligent and beautiful. Literally, it says she had good understanding and a beautiful form. She was lovely within and without. I mean, you'd like to meet her. Abigail was wise. Her decisions made good sense. She governed not by emotion, good logical thinking. Folks, that's what we need to do, logically think things out. She'd been a king thinker. If there wasn't enough, she was good looking. And we'll come back to that in a few moments. Then our third character is David. His well-trained men have been doing their volunteer police work in the fields. In fact, this is the actual report that came back to Abigail from her husband's employees. The men of David's men were very good. They were not insulted. There was a wall up to us both night and day, and all the time we were tending their sheep. It's quite a report. David and his men had done a great job protecting Nabal's shepherds from raids by the thieves. They were crackerjack troops who had done their job faithfully. However, Nabal, a foolish man, couldn't have cared less. He lived for one thing, like a lot of people today do, pleasing himself. Notice the natural conflict that this plot begins to unfold. The conflict implied in verse 3 is between husband and wife. Nabal and his wife Abigail. The white woman was intelligent and beautiful, but the man was harsh and evil. Their temperaments are different. Their behavior is different. The way they treat each other is different. It's interesting to see how the woman handled the conflict with her belligerent, stubborn, hard, deceptive, and honest, dishonest husband. Some of you may have like that, a wife or a husband. But the story goes on. David said to the young men, go up to Carmel and visit Nabal. And greet him in my name, and thus you shall say, how long? Have a long peace to you, and peace to your house, and peace to all that is you have. Shalom, shalom, shalom. David sends his gracious and peaceful greetings to Nabal. May your tribe, may your flocks, may your profits increase. Enjoy the life, the goodness of life. He also instructed his messengers to say, now I've heard that you have shears, now that you have shepherds and have been with us, that we have not insulted them, and nor have we missed anything in all the days they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we have come in on a festive day. Please give us whatever you find as a hand to your servants and to your son David. It's interesting that David didn't go to Nabal himself. Perhaps he didn't want to intimidate him. Didn't want to pull rank or show up with the hundreds of horsemen along his side. Instead, a few men. So David's men go to Nabal in place where they communicate, and David greeting them and wait for their pay. But Nabal said to David's servants, who the world is David? And who is the son of Jesse? And how many servants today who are each breaking away from his master? Shall I take my bread and my water, my men, my meat that I have slaughtered for my shears and give it to these men whose origin I do not know? Gracious, yeah, that's really gracious. Because Nabal knew. Notice how many said, my. Guess what his eyes were? My and mine. Now, here's where everything breaks loose. Hold your seats, because this is where David, our hero, the same guy who months before refused to retaliate and fight back when Saul was trying to kill him. This is David, the master model of patience. Maybe the men hit David at the wrong time. Let's face it. When men are hungry, they're a little testy. Maybe David put out his out in the field, he's got the fire going. He can already taste his shish kebab and the onions and green peppers and the roasting mutton. But his guys show up empty-handed. Here's where anger explodes in the temporary insanity. So David's young men retraced their way and went back, and they came and told him all those words. And David said to his men, "Each of you gird on his own sword." So each man girded his sword, and David girded also his sword. And about 400 went up behind David, while 200 stayed behind to keep the camp. 400 men. That'll probably handle Nabal, don't you think? When you overdo something in our house, we have a saying that says, "You're killing a roach with a shotgun." You kill the roach, all right, means you blow the wall out at the same time. Hey, nobody puts up a sword just to have a discussion. So we have a pretty good idea where he's going. David's mind was here, but to talk about overkill, there's no need to take a few hundred men to squash one tightwad. David had lost control. In his very practical book on the life of David, The Making of a Man, Alan writes, David, what's wrong with you? Why? One of the most wonderful things we have learned about you recently is your patience with Saul. You learned to wait on the Lord, to refuse to lift a hand, to touch the Lord's anointed. Although he had been your enemy for so many years, but now, look at you. Your self-restraint has gone to pieces. A few insulting words from a fool of a man like Nabal had made you see red. David, what in the world is the matter? This is their third conflict, by his anger. This was the third conflict, by the way, between anger and murder so far. David had lost the battle. He was completely enraged. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, put yourself in Abigail's sandals. Candidly, this could be the opportunity to get rid of a notch loser. Say something spiritual like, "Oh, I better pray about this. Those thundering hoofs are coming down the hill, and she is still there praying. Lord, take him safe swiftly." It's her chance. After all, Nabal had set himself up for this. It's time he learned a lesson. You know, that's the way a carnal wife or a carnal person or a carnal husband or anything, that's the way they think. That's the way it's all his fault anyway. But now, by chance, depravity on parade. Instead, observe what happens. Well, the young man told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Behold, David sent messengers from the wilderness. Yet men were very good to us and not insult us. We didn't mention a thing. Went along with them when they're in the fields, and they protected us. There was a wall between the savages around them night and day, and David's men helped in every way they could. Now, therefore, know and consider, you should do for evil is a plot against our master, against all his household, and such a worthless man no one can speak." So here comes the message, and Abigail says, none of that come to her, not to Nabal. Why? Because he was unapproachable. There's another indication of Abigail's wisdom. She sees her husband for what he is. She knows his weakness moments. Abigail did not fight. She protected. How gracious of her. How wise. I wonder how many we'd know that we had a conflict with somebody and we know that somebody was coming to take him out. I wonder what we'd do. And Abigail heard and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 jugs of wine, 5 sheep, 5 measures of roasted grain, and 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes, and loaded them on the donkeys. She said to her young man, "Go before me. Behold, I am coming after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. Wow, 200 loaves of bread? You got to have a bunch of Big Macs on that. Some of the very best counsel a man can get from his wife, who knows him better than anybody else. They know what to do, when to do it, and they usually do it right. sometimes a wife needs to act in favor of her husband, not to sell her to him. Abigail did not literally run to Nabal and say what she was going to do. She just did it. Now, just picture this. David and his men were coming to pull down, tilt down the hill. The only thing louder than their horses are their stomachs growling in anger. Their anger intensifies with each passing mile. And it came about as she was riding her donkey and coming down by the hidden parts of the mountain. And that beheld David and his men. And Abigail saw David. She heard and dismounted from her donkey and fell on her face before David and bowed herself before David, because she knew he was going to be a king eventually. Abigail already thought through what she was going to do. Number one, her act, and number two, her faith, and number three, her loyalty. First, she fell face down, which was a custom at that time. And looked at her text. Six times she called out to herself, "Your maidservant," and eight times she calls to David, "My Lord, my Lord." The woman is a study in wisdom. "Oh, my alone, my Lord, be blamed. Please let your maidservant speak to you and listen to your words. Please do not, Lord, pay attention to this worthless man named Nabal. For his name is, so he is, foolish. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, deceive the young man of my Lord whom you sent." She knew her husband, didn't she? "Now, therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, since the Lord restrained you from shedding blood and from avenging yourself by your own hand, now let your enemies and those seek evil against my Lord be as Nabal. Now let your gift, let this gift, which your maidservant has bought to my Lord, be given to this young man who accompanied my Lord. Please forgive transgressions of your maidservants. The Lord will certainly make my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord is fighting the battle of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in all your days." What faith she had. David, as I look at you, I'm looking at the next king. Don't ruin your record with a murder. You're bigger than that, David. She had a good psychology course. "You have been wronged, and murder isn't the only answer. Wait, David, take what I have provided and turn around and go back. You'll have to live with that track record. David, you don't need that. When the Lord shall deal well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant." So she knew she was going to be taken care of. She said to David, "The Lord will take care of me." Oh, what a speech, what a plea. When you face a critical condition, you have to do something very creative. Apart from the Bible, there's no handbook that will tell you what to do. Nabal's wife hung in the balance, and depending on how short David's fuse was, that's how long Nabal would live. His wife realized this. She decided, "He'll take heart, a lot of food and plenty of message for me to turn the man's heart, and he can be certain." Often we're faced with common crisis and the standard garden variety answers to sort of tuck your tail between your legs and run yourself into the corner. Let the cobwebs form on you. But there is a better way, as long as the breath in your lungs. You have a purpose for living. You have a reason to exist, no matter how bad the track record might have been marked by disobedience and compromise. Through your life, you're alive, you're existing, and God says, "There's a reason. I'm going to do creative things." That's what Abigail did with this crisis. She says, "Remember your maidservant when the tide of your life turns. That's all I ask." Then David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, who is sending you this day." What a guy. Is it any wonder God chose David as a man of his own heart. May God forever keep us flexible and teachable. Someone had a word in this season for a blind spot in our lives, but nothing more than dumbest dummies if we ignore them. David models genuine humility here, and then he has. And blessed be your discernment, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from bloodshed and from avenging myself at my own hand because of sanity in my temper. So David received her hand, what she had brought him. He said to her, go to your house in peace. See, I have listened to you and granted your request. Fantastic. Abigail goes home and her husband and puts an arm around him and says, honey, thanks. You're a great lady, more precious than rubies. You know, I wish you'd have said that. I wish that things had been different. But when Abigail got home, Nabal was there, drunk, feasting, shouting, have a happy time. And Abigail thought, I won't say anything to him until morning. Then I'll tell him what I've done and how I saved his life. She stood between her husband and death. But the fool was so drunk, she couldn't even tell him about it. She crawled in the bed and pulled the covers up to it and went to sleep. Next morning, Nabal was sober, and she told him what had happened. Well, wonder what his reaction. The guy had a stroke. Literally, the guy had a stroke. He listened to the story, and had 401 guys were on the way to cut off his head, and he got really still. His eyes became glazed, and I could imagine. 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. Isn't it amazing? When you do the right thing, without tiring of it, God takes care of the impossible things. As we saw in the previous chapter, when a man's way pleases the Lord, he makes even the enemies be at his peace with him. The same could be said of a woman. There's no impossible situation that God cannot handle. Seeing Abigail's faithfulness, God let her spend the night, depending on him. And shortly after, she buried her husband. And David's response when he heard that Nabal was dead, blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the case of my reproach and from the hand of Nabal, so has kept back his servant from evil, and the Lord has returned the evil of Nabal on his own head. Oh my, did David learn a lesson. He kept me from murdering this guy, from doing evil. I don't have to fight that kind of battle. If vengeance is required, God to do so. And both Abigail and David, this story had a happy ending. He learned that Nabal was dead. So what did David do? What would you do? He said a marriage proposal. That wonderful, beautiful, good inside and out to Abigail, and she accepted. Three things strike me about the incident in the life of David and our lives today. First of all, whatever you do when conflict arises, be wise. Be wise. The other, wisdom will make the difference. Second thing, take each conflict as it comes and handle it separately. You may have won a battle today, but that doesn't count when there's a skirmish that comes. You may have a great measure of patience today, but tomorrow not. The third thing we can take away from this experience in life from David is that whatever you realize, nothing can do, wait patiently. Impossible and past. Call for a firm application of breaks. Don't keep going. Restrain yourself from anything hasty. Whatever possible, put on the brakes. Slow down. I seldom make wise decisions in a hurry. Furthermore, I seldom felt sorry for anything I didn't say. David obviously learned this lesson well, for he writes in Psalms 40, I wait patiently on the Lord, and he inclined me and heard my cry. He brought me up out of a pit of destruction, out of the mire clay, and he set my feet upon a rock, making my footsteps firm. Psalms 41:2, 40, verses 1 and 2. Psalms 40 never says that David's situation changed. It says David changed. When you wait, your situation may not change, but you look back, you may discover that the reason for waiting was all for your benefit, because you're the one who needed to change. You know, David was an unusual man. People, maybe somebody out there, vex you with hot tempers, but wait on the Lord. Wait patiently. This is Gene. Good night. If you need to respond to me, text me at 865-803-7334. 865-803-7334. It's been a blessing, and good night.